to the Post Purchase Pro Podcast. This is the only podcast that dives deep into post-purchase marketing to help Amazon sellers increase sales, ranking, reviews, and profits. It's everything that happens after the initial sale that makes a difference. We call this the back end.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to the podcast. I am your host, Dylan Pettijohn, today, and I'm here with my co-host, Amir, and we are going to be interviewing Oz Merchant from Viably, or, yeah, sorry.
Viably, yes.
I know two that, like, have a similar name, so I flopped on that one real quick, but I did get it correct. You know what I'm going for. But... So let's just get into it. Could you give, for those people that don't know Viably, could you give a little background into what you guys do in the space?
Sure, absolutely. Appreciate Dylan, Amir, you guys having me on this morning, I guess. And Viably is both a banking and funding platform, as well as a cash flow management and planning tool, really helping e-commerce folks, whether you're selling on Amazon, Shopify, Walmart, eBay, really to kind of help scale up that business. We kind of start off with the banking focus first and building out kind of a banking platform, really just targeting really kind of e-commerce folks, and then added in the funding components, because as everybody knows in this space, capital is key. It's a very capital intensive business to be buying products and turning around selling them again. And, the limit of growth is often tied to how much capital you have access to kind of make the buying decisions you need to help scale and grow the business. So we certainly focus on that. And then really the cash flow management and planning tool is to really help sellers, because so much of the business relies on just having the amount of capital kind of and cash just going through the business and being able to kind of forecast and manage to say, okay, when am I going to need, you know, this much money to kind of make the decisions I need to, whether I'm doing private label, new product launches, new variations, or just doing wholesale and you need to keep buying on a regular basis. So having that information at your fingertips makes a big difference.
Yeah, I could see that, how that definitely would make a really big difference. And from my personal experience, yeah, cash flow is the main thing that restricts growth in this business. So is this like, what was your background? Were you in the banking space beforehand and transitioned over to the e-commerce space, or how did you get started in this?
Yeah, so I call this my Act 3. So Act 1 was actual retail, brick and mortar, wholesale manufacturing space. Then I went into high tech for a good number of years. And then e-commerce as Act 3 is kind of a culmination of both kind of the commerce side of my journey and bringing in the high tech piece, because we are essentially a technology company that is leveraging kind of really a fintech company focusing on the finance side. So the team that actually created Viably, we've actually all worked together for about 10 years now. We actually had a previous company called Samanage, which we sold about 5 years ago, and kind of everybody took some time off, enjoyed that exit, and CEO reached kind of out and said, hey, I want to get the band back together. About 22 of us came back together, and we went to really solve an issue that we ran into kind of in the early days. Being a SaaS company in the previous company, we understood that, you know, traditional banking doesn't know how to underwrite a SaaS business, nor do they know how to underwrite a e-commerce business. You know, a traditional bank is looking at, okay, well, where's the property? Where's the equipment? Where's something we can collateralize and give you funding from? They don't have a model that says, well, you know, on the SaaS side, it was like, well, there's nothing. There's just this software we're building and we're selling that. So they didn't know how to underwrite that. In the e-commerce, same thing. It's like, you know, I'm generating all these sales, but I don't need to have a big warehouse facility necessarily. I don't need to have all this infrastructure to kind of something that could at least get collateralized. So traditional banks were like, well, we don't really know how to underwrite that business. Or they were wanting, you know, some major kind of personal guarantees to say, okay, well, something happens to the business, then we got to come after you. So to solve that problem, we're like, okay, we get this space. We know how to kind of understand some of those challenges that people who sell on kind of essentially the cloud run into. So let's go help those folks out. So that's what we did.
No, that's awesome. What, if you don't mind me asking, what did you do before in the tech space? Was it still fintech or?
No, so the previous company, Semantage, was a IT service management. So if, kind of competing in the enterprise service desk space. So talking to a lot of IT folks and internal, if you're a big enough company at some point, you need kind of an internal ticketing system to communicate between the different departments and teams. So we were kind of that essential core function that lets you communicate amongst all your team. So
gotcha. So similar to like Jira or Trello or ClickUp or something like that?
So those will do more project management. So if you're familiar with like a Zendesk or like with Zendesk is like customer facing. So you're using that for ticketing for customer support, external facing. Mm-hmm. We were doing it for internal, meaning like if you're over 100 employees, you're going to have like, okay, HR has a service that's providing to the rest of the company. IT is providing a service to the rest of the company. Marketing is providing potentially a service to the company. So it allows you to sit there and communicate amongst your internal teams and actually have kind of accountability and service level metrics to say, you know, are they responding to me in a timely manner or not? So, you know, if it's payroll, for example, if I have an issue with payroll, rather than having to walk over that, I can just submit a ticket. It gets routed to the payroll team and they can take care of the issue. Maybe it's an address change. Maybe it's my insurance allowance and stuff I need to change. So
that makes sense. That makes a lot more sense. I was thinking of some stuff that we had set up internally, but it sounds like that is more of a system like what we have on our outbound side.
Yeah. Like I said, anytime you get big enough, that becomes an issue that you need to tackle rather than trying to do that either through emails or Slacks or just walking back and forth. You want to just have some accountability. So that's what we solved for.
Gotcha. So do you guys have any case studies with Viably of some of the clients that you've worked with or anything that you could share?
Yeah, in fact, we've got a lot on the website as well. I mean, we, you know, focused a lot on just kind of helping. You know, when it comes to capital, there's the right time to take capital, meaning you don't want to take it too soon, meaning that if you're still trying to figure things out, you're not going to get a good ROI on that capital, meaning that if your ads aren't optimized, you're basically, you can take money and kind of dump it into ads. But if you have kind of kind of layout where it's not just optimized, you're basically just, you're covering the essential problem because you're feeding more, you're generating the sales, which you're expecting, but you know, is it for the best ROI for that dollar? So in the early days, or you're maybe just kind of figuring out kind of your infrastructure and stuff. So you're not optimized and how quickly your throughput, meaning like if you're doing your own warehousing stuff, how quickly can I get stuff into the warehouse, get it prepped and get it back out? If that's not optimized, you know, money can certainly help, but it's, you know, am I getting the right kind of ROI for that? So the early days, it doesn't necessarily make sense. And when you're later in your kind of your journey, I mean, like you're mature and you're at a point where you've been at this, you know, 10 plus years, and you're growing only, you know, 10, 15% year over year. Probably at that point, you know, you've got some other options. You're not scaling nearly as fast, and you could probably make cash flow work. It's everything in the middle where, you know, the cash flow is tight and you're wanting to grow faster than cash flow will allow for. That's where you get the best ROI. And that's what we're, you know, typically trying to find companies to say, okay, are you at that point? Do you need capital? You know, so like a lot of wholesalers we work with, they'll hit a point where, yeah, they've got this kind of machine in place that, you know, they know how to, you know, just get the goods into their warehouse, get it out very quickly. They have very minimal ad spend, and they've set up the kind of right supplier relationships so that they're making, you know, profit for every, on every sale. They've got profitable SKUs. So for them, really, it's a matter of just, you know, the cash, the capital should be the constraint in helping them grow. So at that point, you know, just having, once you have the machine in place, it's like every dollar I put into the machine, I know I can generate this much profits out of the business. Same thing on a private label side. The cash conversion cycles are just different, meaning that if you're in wholesale, you can typically do, you're turning that cash every 60 days. If you're doing private label, maybe it's anywhere from 5 to 7 months because you've got new products that you're bringing in from overseas. You're getting it prepped, getting into Amazon, and you're probably buying about 90 days worth of inventory. So that cycle is just longer. But once that machine's in place, then it's like, okay, I know, you know, how to kind of either launch a new product because I've done this enough times, or I've got you know, the existing kind of traffic coming for this particular product. I'm just going to launch a couple more variations that I know I can kind of get a nice bump in the business. So at that point, you know, taking that capital just makes a lot of sense because they know that they can just take it and generate more profits out of it. So finding those people in the space, there's so many of them. It's just, you know, A, are they thinking about it that way? Are they thinking about cash conversion cycles that way? Meaning like, you know, what's my full cycle? What's that journey of money leaving the business and money coming back in? And once they understand that, it's like, okay, then how do I actually use capital from the outside to, you know, really take and scale this? And, you know, that can vary, meaning like you may have every couple of months you're launching new SKUs or new variations. So this cycles may be overlapping, but kind of having a partner that can help and really understands that model and that can kind of fund that cycle to say, okay, I can really take this business and scale this up over the course of years. Because we have folks that will go, you know, be six figures and inside of 12 months can basically be a nice seven-figure business just because they've kind of laid the right foundation. They've got the right infrastructure in place. They've got the right teams in place. Now it's just like, okay, now I'm at a point where throwing capital at this makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, no, Oz, you kind of touched on it there at the end about like just working with your customers and clients and whatnot and trying to figure out the best way to pursue, you know, the actual final outcome that you guys are looking for, right? Could you give us a little bit of more background on kind of how customer feedback has actually shaped the way that your company operates or how it services the offers?
Yeah, so meaning like the journey of that?
Yeah, just like kind of how did you get to the point where you're at now where you know 100%, okay, this is what we got to do. Like just what feedback have you heard from customers that's helped you actually grow to the point that you're at now?
Yeah. So, you know, because we're a technology platform, we're connecting to all the data, meaning that we're bringing in, we're letting you connect to your Amazon storage, your Shopify, Walmart, eBay, plus your bank accounts, plus your credit cards. So we get a holistic picture of the business. So it's not siloed to any particular marketplace, but looking at the business as a whole. To say, okay, you've got expenses and revenues from this channel. It could be Amazon, but in addition to that, you've got other expenses for consultants, VAs, software that you're paying for, taxes, insurance. So you're getting to see this whole holistic picture. And from an underwriting standpoint, it's data that we need already, but we actually turn around and share that back to you. So that's where we essentially give you this cash flow planning and management tools, because it's the same kind of data that we're looking at. We just make that available so you can actually start seeing exactly kind of what we see and say, okay, well, this is how my business is performing. This is how it looks 12 months out, looks at it 12 months back as well. And I can see kind of the trend line and how that business is shaping out. And then from there, you can start planning out and say, okay, if I were going to go do a new launch, say in February, you know, what can I basically do with my existing cash flow? Can I go do one new product, one new SKU launch, and can I do three variations? That may be the right strategy, meaning that, okay, where the business at, that's the right way to go, but you may not have the cash flow to cover that. So now you've got the data to say, well, either I change my strategy and say, well, maybe I go launch one new product and just do one new variation, or if it makes sense, okay, I will do those three variations as well, but I need to get some additional capital to go execute on that. So now I have kind of the data and I have the means to, and the relationship with a partner like Viably to go really execute on that. And, you know, like I said, that's a lot of it becomes a discussion because it's like, okay, well, you know, sometimes it's planning out because the other piece of it is, especially when on private label, you don't need all the capital right away. You need a portion of it now as a down payment. I need some more again in 30 to 45 days for, you know, release of those goods. And maybe sometimes you're paying it even once it arrives at port here. So we can kind of structure that really to align with the business. And then you can actually kind of map that out in your cash flow planning as well. So say, okay, I need this much here, this much here, this much here. And now I can see what's the actual impact of the bottom line. Is it, am I staying in a healthy cash flow or am I hitting some dips and stuff?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And I know that you said it a little earlier during this podcast episode, but you talked about having just a good foundation to start on and how important that is. Not only for Amazon, but pretty much everything in life as we've kind of grown to learn. So what advice do you have for aspiring entrepreneurs, like someone who's just now getting started in the Amazon seller industry?
Yeah, so I mean, part of it is understanding where you're starting from. So, you know, we see a lot of people take this journey going like, you know, they'll start off with retail, online arbitrage, move into some wholesale, and then they'll start experimenting with some private label because each one, you know, it's kind of different barriers to entry, you know, meaning like you can start off very easily in, you know, $1,000 in arbitrage. Wholesale, okay, you need to do some, you know, bigger bulk orders, so you need a little bit more cash flow to do that. Private label gets a little riskier, meaning that you're taking a bet. Okay, I think I'm solving this problem. There's enough demand for it. I've got my own kind of twist on this, and I've figured out kind of how I can advertise this so it ends up being a profitable sale. And I've, you know, reached out and find somebody that I can trust from the supply side that can help kind of design this and build this product for me and get it to me here. So each one kind of requires more education, more understanding of the ecosystem, more networks, more partnerships. And one of the nice things about this space is, you know, compared to a lot of other industries, it's so collaborative that the amount of kind of help and resources available, it's just mind-boggling. I've never seen that anywhere, that there's such a willingness to kind of help others in that journey. And at the same time, everyone's still kind of like, you know, there's such a respect that, you know, people talk about share the categories they sell, but, you know, everyone's kind of private about what it is they exactly do. And there's such a mutual respect for all of that. And at the same time, everyone's helping, which is really cool to see. So I would say for somebody getting into the space is, you know, first look at kind of your own finances to say where does it make sense. You know, I've seen people jump in at private label side because they had the means to do it and they had a particular idea. So others do it at wholesale level, and then a lot that do it on the arbitrage level. So, you know, your finances makes a big difference. The other is, oftentimes people will come, I have this idea and I want to sell it. And it's like, if you're at least in the Amazon space, it's like the idea I think matters less. It's more about leverage all the data that's available to see what the demand is. Just because you have an idea, it doesn't mean that somebody wants it. You know, it's, and I talked to a lot of people that, you know, outside of the Amazon space, and they're like, you know, like everybody has an idea, like, hey, well, I wonder if I could go sell this. Well, that's not exactly the way to think about it. There is a, you know, steady traffic coming here. You know, just give the people what they're wanting and put your own little twist on it. So it's helping them kind of understand that, it's not necessarily about like innovation, like I'm going to go radically change the industry. It's like, okay, here's this flow of money coming through that kind of just tap in and say, you know, I have a new way to kind of help you solve that problem. And can I stream, you know, kind of put a little tributary from that flow of money coming to me now? So,
yeah, not trying to reinvent the wheel.
Yeah. You know, the thing is, it's very expensive. You know, people who do those type of moves require deep pockets to kind of really influence and educate the marketplace. Here, it's like, okay, there's enough demand, enough people doing stuff. It's just finding your own little twist on it. So, you know, one is, like I said, you know, the finances. The other is, don't try to reinvent the wheel. And part of that journey is kind of understanding what your own goals are for this. You know, are you looking to have an exit down the road? Are you looking just to have some extra money to do renovations around the house? You just want to have, you know, or take a vacation? Because at some point you have to decide, you know, am I thinking this as a just a little side hustle, or is this a legitimate business? There's an amazing number of people I've seen that have they still think of it as a side hustle, but now they're doing like $4 or $5 million a year. At some point you need to say, okay, well, maybe I do have a business here, and I need to start making these the steps and decisions so that it's actually running and operating like a business. Mm-hmm. You know, in fact, I was at a, actually, I think Sean was there. This, I think, down in Orlando, or it's one of those events. And I asked a group, the group that was there, was on a panel. It's like, how many of you consider yourself an entrepreneur? Pretty much everybody's hands go up. And I asked them, how many of you think of yourself as a CEO? And only 3 or 4 hands went up. And I asked, you know, which of those roles, which of those titles are part of an org chart? And entrepreneur is never part of an org chart. A CEO is. So when you start thinking of yourself as a CEO, then you start thinking of yourself as, okay, I have a business here. And if I have a business, then I'm filling the seat of CEO, but how many other seats am I filling? And, you know, then you start thinking about, okay, now I'm going to start actually working on the business. Okay, I've got the CEO seat filled, but I've got other 5 seats that I'm sitting in. Can I now go hire and start building out a team to really help me scale up this business? So it just changes the mindset of, you know, how you're thinking about this. Not that, you know, the side hustle of being an entrepreneur is wrong. It's just knowing at some point, is that the journey you want to stay on, or am I on a journey to say, I'm going to turn this into a real business and scale this up? And like one of our customers, they hit a real big milestone early this year, took 3 months off, traveled with the family, and did not have to work in the business. To take 3 months, that was huge. To not actually be part of a day-to-day. I mean, that means that's enough infrastructure in place. The teams are in place. That's a big milestone. I have another customer. His goal is to have 10 days off next year, which is, you know, it's a baby step. So it's like, you know, whatever helps you get to that outcome that you're looking for. I think a lot of people start this off as a side hustle, and it just becomes the next job they're wearing. And now they're basically living and breathing work, whether it's they're 9 to 5, then into the Amazon. And they, if they don't have a real goal for where they're going with this, it's like years will just slip on by and you don't really know what you did it for.
I think, one thing that I can take from that is there's just varying levels of seriousness, and that changes as you go through the progression of, okay, I'm actually making money with this now. It's not like side hustle money anymore. And it grows into something where you're like, okay, I guess I really don't need to work anymore in this other job because I'm doubling the amount of work I have to do working on this and working on that. I should go all in on this because this is really was taken over, and I need to treat it more like the business it is. And it's no longer, you know, $1,000, $2,000, $3,000 a month side hustle. But another thing that you had said that I thought was really interesting is that some people look at it as that side hustle, but some people also look at it at the end of the day as an exit opportunity. Because I want to say over the years that I've been in the space, I've seen a shift in how many people are looking at it as the side hustle to shifting more people nowadays that I talk to are actually talking about the exits, and that's more what they're excited about. And the interim cash flow isn't really as, of course it's important, but that's not what they're focused on. They're focused on that big payday at the end of it.
Exactly. And that's also recognizing what type of business do you have? You know, if you're just doing RA, OA, nobody's going to want to buy that. There's not, yeah. You know, you're not putting in the hustle, you know, nothing's being generated. Wholesale, you know, what are you really selling in wholesale business? You're selling your operational efficiency and your supplier relations, and maybe an exclusive that you have. When you get to private label, now you actually have some, you know, intellectual property. You've got patents. You've got, you know, something uniquely defined that it gives you better multiples. So, you know, nothing wrong with that. I'm glad people are thinking with kind of the end in mind. I think, at least from last year, people had a lot of unreal expectations this year. And it took about 6 months for people to kind of like, okay, I'm not getting a 7 to 8 multiple. So, you know, some resetting the expectations was, I think, the latter half of this year helped. And I think next year, everyone seems to be a lot more optimistic. You'll start seeing a trend back up, but probably not kind of the heyday of what it was a year or two back. So, which is fine. I mean, it's, you know, each business is different. You know, like in the software space, the multiples for software is very different than e-commerce because one is much more capital intensive than the other. So, you know, part of that is just understanding what kind of business are you in and what kind of it makes sense for that kind of business to have as from an exit standpoint, from a multiple standpoint. And what kind of brand are you building if you're looking on the private label side? You know, I was talking to some folks at Accelerate. You know, they were looking at you have an IPO last year, then they're pushing off and they're, I think, shooting for it for next year. So, you know, that's a 250 person organization now, and they've really built out a solid brand and they've got multiple channels across from e-commerce to brick and mortar. You know, they're doing a lot of B2B stuff. So, you know, it's at some point you have, like I said, you know, decide what's the journey you want to take and where do you want to take it to and how seriously you're going to take the business. Because there's a lot of potentials. There's a lot of opportunities, a lot of problems to solve, a lot of different twists on things. And then a lot of it's just kind of telling the story and having something that kind of resonates with a niche, an audience that kind of, you know, you kind of create your own tribe and the tribe kind of follows everything you're doing and likes, you know, your messaging, the problems you're solving and how you're solving it. And, you know, that's a great way to kind of build a company.
Yeah, no, that really makes sense. So if anybody wanted to reach out to you at Viably or the team at Viably, how could they get in touch? How could they, you know, how could they reach out to you guys? And then right before that, I did have one other question. Sorry to throw this in here. For those people, like Amir had mentioned earlier, that they were in the process of getting started. Let's say they had reached that point where they are up and selling. Would you tell them they should wait until their ads are optimized and everything is in line as far as like they've got their product purchase price optimized, they've got their ads optimized, and then they should reach out? Or at what stage do you really think makes sense to at least start that process?
So a couple of things to that. So one is from the platform as a whole, I mean, we've got the digital banking for e-commerce, the cash flow management planning tools. You can start using all that. The whole platform is free. So anybody can start using that. From a funding standpoint, you may still qualify for funding. It's not like we're saying no to that. It's just as a business owner, you want to think about, you know, am I getting the right kind of ROI for me? But there are times that, you know, it just makes sense. I need the capital to take that next leap. You know, we're working with somebody that they've got a few SKUs, but they're looking to move to a new factory. And for them to move to the new factory, the minimum order size is just much larger, but it will make a big difference to their business. So for them, it makes sense to kind of take that leap just because it's going to really elevate the business. It'll pretty much take them from a six-figure business to a seven-figure business just because, you know, the unit cost is going to be far lower for them. So those are the type of bets they're willing to make because they've seen enough kind of proof points just because they've been doing this for the last couple of years. They've just been doing with different manufacturers in much smaller quantities. So, you know, there's no kind of clear-cut answer to say that this is the best time. There are just more optimal times than other, or there may be times where you're just going to get better ROI on how you're using that capital. So, like I said, in the meantime, you can still use the banking platform. You can still do the cash flow planning and forecasting. And, you know, then it's just simple as like, okay, click the button whenever you're ready for funding and just say, okay, I want funding as well. You know, the algorithm will kind of trigger and do the underwriting and give you an offer. Simple as that.
Awesome. And was there anything that we wanted to give away to anybody in the audience that wanted to reach out to you guys? First, how can they get in touch? And then did you guys have an offer for the audience that's listening to the podcast currently?
Yeah. So the best way to get in touch is just if you go to runviably.com, R-U-N-V-I-A-B-L-Y, I'm sure you guys will have a link here. Mm-hmm. That's the best way. And I'm and all the handles for Viably is just kind of at runviably. I'm also at Oz Merchant in most places as well, if you want to reach out to me. And the offer we have to the Post-Purchase Pro audience is $500 for the first five customers that are coming through you guys and that are getting funding from us. So
it's awesome.
We'll, I think, make that link for that available in the show notes, I believe.
Yep. Well, we're going to be adding that to the show notes. Awesome.
Love it.
Well, thank you so much, Oz, today for being here. I really appreciate it. I'm sure that the audience that's listening to this is going to get a ton of value, not only from learning about what they can do with you guys, but just some of your past experience and being able to share stuff with them as you've grown as an entrepreneur.
Yeah, appreciate you having me on, Dylan. Amir, appreciate it both.
Of course. Thanks for coming.
All right.
Thank you.
We'll sign off here. See you guys.